His room has changed a lot in a few days. You know, from the outside, there's a big difference. I can feel the depth and the stillness has changed a bit. And I know sometimes when we're in it, we don't have a sense of that because we're just, you know, it's just another session, it's just another step, another breath. But I can feel it. I wanted to talk tonight about one of my favorite subjects, compassion. I love this word, and I love even more this feeling that I have when I'm feeling compassion. And when they asked Munindra, one of these Hindu teachers, even Buddhist teachers, I mean, he kind of was about a Vedanta, they would say. Buddhist, but in India, if you know what I mean. And they asked him what the deal was with practice. You know, what's the point? What are we doing here? And he had a real simple answer that I love. It was to live the life fully. I like that. Something about it is just like real courageous, real ballsy, real full contact, you know? That he wanted to live this life fully. So we've been going over these Brahma Viharas, these divine abodes. First one being loving kindness, unconditional friendliness, you could say. And then this is the next one, and this, if you look at it, compassion sees what's hard. So love and kindness or friendliness sees what's good and, you know, wishes well wishes. And then compassion sees what's difficult and longs for its release, you know, like it sees what's difficult. I think I had this from a very young age. I remember the first time I heard this word, a very scary moment for me, because I had hid most of my life. I hid my heart because I didn't live in a house where that was safe or a neighborhood. And we were we were in a very violent situation, and a man reached out to me for help. He didn't know me, but he looked in my eyes. We were in this gang. And he said, "You know, you have more compassion in your eyes than any woman I've ever known. Please help me." And I never heard the word compassion. I was only, you know, 16, 17. And it scared me so much because I knew he seen what I was trying to hide. I didn't know they had a word for it, but I knew I gotta get away from this guy really fast. I hope nobody else heard him. Yeah, it was a really scary moment. And so I came to the practice, and I used to experience these as kind of like, you know, a little metta at the end of a meditation, you know? Like a little after-dinner mint, you know? Just end on an up note. You know, do a little metta, feel good, you know? And when I looked into it, the Buddha said that in and of themselves, that this practice, these practices, these heart practices, would lead to liberation. If you just did that, it's just amazing to me. You know, he said that about so many things. You know what I mean? It's just like, yo, that makes it like every other thing you ever saw us. You know, if you just did the body, you would become completely enlightened. If you just did the Brahma Viharas, you'd be completely enlightened. Okay. So we've heard about these two wings, wisdom and compassion, as this bird flies toward freedom. And so if compassion is at least half of the path, I think it's the bigger half. I do. The wisdom part, that's cool. But I think the heart piece for me, because, you know, I guess in every moment you have this choice, you know, these two questions that are always pervading meditation practice. What's going on, and can I receive it in the heart of compassion, you know? Kind awareness, right? And if I gotta lose one, if I gotta lose one, let it be the awareness. I want to remain kind. I know a bunch of jerks that can meditate, you know? So, you know, it's not about concentration or wisdom for me. It's about the kindness. You know, that's my healing in this life. So compassion is this simple truth, this simple knowing that I care about the suffering. That's true. So how do we get in touch with that? How do we practice it? How do we explore it? How do we heal it? That's kind of what I want to spend the next 20 minutes going over. The sixth Zen patriarch says, awareness is the foundation of kindness. Kindness is the expression of awareness. Awareness is the foundation of kindness, and kindness is the expression of awareness. So I don't think you can't pull these things apart. And there's this story of this guy walks up to the Buddha, and he's just like, wow, man, it's really true. Dude, you're totally emanating. You're radiating love. How are you doing that? What are you? What are you doing? And the Buddha told him that he no longer had ill will and hatred, that he had cut it out at the root, and all that remained was a free heart. That this is the beauty of the unobscured heart that is in every one of us. And then Rumi, he makes it even worse. You know, he says, your task is to not seek for love, but merely to seek and find the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. This is not good news, man. I didn't feel anything like this. These stories just made me feel further from being that. I was like, man, that's not... you know, there's nothing happening in this neighborhood like that. You know? So I just felt further and further away. The more they told me these stories to reassure me, the further away I felt. I resisted it. I hated these practices. You know, I had shut down my heart a long time ago. These stories only confirmed my belief that I was broken. That, maybe this couldn't work for a person like me. All this self-judgment, you know? And I just started the practice trying to find some hard ice. I would just keep backing up until I found something that I could care about, you know? Something I could authentically care about. I didn't really like the phrases. I thought they were stupid. They felt kind of Hallmarky, you know? Real Mr. Rogers-y, you know? Different than the image of Mr. Rogers. One of the yogis, she said she felt like, you know, repeating the phrases over and over, she felt like she was in Dharma detention. You know? May I be happy, may I be peaceful. So it's not like we come to the practice like, you know, wide open hearts, ready to cultivate more of the same. You know, a lot of us have resistance to this stuff and have long histories of disconnecting, just trying to keep ourselves safe. You know, a lot of us have been through some stuff. And what the assurance is here is to say, well, if you allow yourself to touch that pain, to really care about it, to really tend to the wound, that what will naturally arise is compassion. It's hard for me to understand what they were, what they meant. I struggled thinking, how could I like something that I hate? What kind of trickery is this? I was collapsing like into care. You know, like it was different things. I could care about something, not have to like it. It felt like I had to betray myself and be fake in order to use these affirmations. You know? Very confusing. And so as I started doing the practices and they were asking me to touch the pain, this pain that I had run from my whole life, that I, you know, dragged through relationships and drug addiction and all this other stuff, to literally turn toward it. The premise was terrifying. And therein lies the rub. Unless we let ourselves feel it, we can't heal it. Right? There won't be any compassionate response if I don't allow myself to feel the pain, turn toward it. So it's a little, what do they call that when it's like not, it's the opposite of intuitive?
Counterintuitive.
Boom. Counterintuitive. So we all want to have a lot of compassion, but I mean, you know, when it talks about touching the pain, most of us want to get off the bus, you know? It's like, yeah, maybe. And that's why I think it's so hard to difficult to cultivate when people tell me that they're having a difficult time cultivating compassion. I wonder if they've really tended to the wound, really brought mindfulness to it, you know, honored it. So where we got to begin, where we're at, so we begin to just turn toward what's painful in ourselves and other beings. I won't really distinguish much from here, you know, it's just pain, saw suffering. I don't feel a sense of ownership, like it's mine or theirs. It's just the difficulty. One thing that I found hindered me from being able to touch it, to feel it, to tend to it, was this constant idea that it should be some other way. You know, like I didn't think it should be like this for me. I didn't think I should be this disconnected, or this shouldn't have happened to me, or I shouldn't have even been in the company of these kind of people, or whatever, you know? What happens in that it shouldn't be like this? I mean, this is really the essence of suffering. But the way it hindered me from being present, right, is my ability to fully experience it, because I was still running this story. So I couldn't experience it or care for it. And so the compassion couldn't arise. So I was face to face with this idea that, you know, the heart of suffering is thinking it shouldn't be this way. Something else should be happening. My teachers talked to me about my commitment to being present, how much courage it takes and honesty, you know, if that's what we were doing here, to see what is true. They asked me to look inside and spend some time with myself so I could see what was there. What was I so scared of? Why couldn't I have access to it? This great heart of compassion that they kept talking about. Where did I shut off? Where did I shut down? And could I just put my toe in? So it was a slow process. But I really had to find out what's going on in here. My relationship to pain. And so many ideas and judgments of how I should be. You know, I shouldn't be frustrated or horny or angry or whatever. You know, you fill in the blanks, right? This continued to bolster this story that something is wrong. Something is wrong with me, obviously. So I was lost in the story. Couldn't stay present. I kept getting dragged away into endless stories of brokenness. And it felt overwhelming. And it made sense to me that I spent my life trying to change it, push it away, ignore it, fix it. How can we get close to something if we don't feel safe, you know? It might grow, it might overwhelm us. So sometimes it didn't feel safe to feel. So we have to start wherever we are, obviously. Because we can't pick what arises. You know, to rest in luminous awareness when we don't feel safe is impossible. And I felt like I was being pushed around by my preferences. Like I was literally like in a prison of preferences. I could care about this, but not that. You know, it was very conditional. And it felt like that inside me, like I was in like a veritable prison within myself. These are the parts I love, these are the parts these are the parts I hate, you know? It's kind of like the three poisons that we've been talking about, greed, hatred, and illusion, you know? I could see it inside of me, these different parts of myself that I didn't care for. I couldn't. Yeah, my relationship to myself was where this path brought me. What couldn't I stay present with? What couldn't I love? And then there came a time where, you know, I understood the path to just give myself permission to be. Like a really tender moment that I get to be just as I am. I felt like exhausted of like trying. I started seeing how much my identity was wrapped up in what I didn't want to be. I'm not angry. What are you talking about? There's nothing wrong with me. You know, and I'm trying to hold it down like a beach ball in the water. Every time it pops up, I'm like, no, that's not mine. No, I don't even know what you're talking about, you know? It's really wild how much what we push away ends up defining us. Wild. So just take a moment and just check in with yourself as I tell this story of, you know, like what it's been like for me to do this practice. And what has it been like for you? Like, what is this practice? Where are you at in the process of just turning toward what's difficult? And this self-aversion so many of us feel is almost like being at war with ourselves. how much of our lives have we forfeited behind this kind of aversion? How often do we offer ourselves some tenderness? Yeah, I experienced this a lot, this withholding love from myself. I experienced it as an extortion, you know, like, okay, I'm gonna love you as long as you keep doing all these things. Or as long as you, whatever it is, you know, lose the weight, gain the weight, get the job, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like a postponement of arrival of when I'm actually gonna start loving myself. And it always feels like it's right around the corner. It's like a mirage, you know? As soon as I get married, as soon as I get divorced, whatever, as soon as I do a retreat and get this meditation thing down, then it's gonna be on. Then I'm just gonna be love. Wow, what's the current story? What am I waiting for now? I forgot, you know? But I experience it now. You know, I see my family going through it and my little sister, you know, it's like, it's the utter violence of tyranny. I have a lot of compassion for that. So, in the process, you know, of trying to do these practices, you know, we gently, as we've been doing, label what arises as we give you these reflections. And if we're not mistaken about those as who we are, right? Because there's this kind of mistaken identity, you know, that I am angry. It's like, no, man, anger just arises. You know, how do I discern between that and not make this about me? You know what I mean? I would take these things very personally, whatever arose. Like, that's why, you know, I'm not worthy of this, or that's why I can't do this, or make up or I'll get lost in these stories and conclusions that I'm coming to simply because frustration's arising or whatever's arising. Something different than I hoped. Once we can experience things, it's just that we are the awareness that these things are floating through. It gives a bit more space to work with restlessness or boredom or unworthiness or whatever. It's just like, it's not defining me. It's not who I am. So that was a big step. I finally found bits of myself that I could, once were completely put out of my heart, but I began to be able to experience them a bit, and then a bit more, and then even fully. This was like the beginning, the middle, and the end. It was like, okay, can I care about this part of my experience, about this part of my pain or suffering or self-aversion? And we've all experienced it. We've all experienced what I'm talking about right now. I'm trying to talk about freedom. But even if you look at just sitting, right, we come to practice and we try to sit down and it can be really uncomfortable, right? But we bear it. So there's a part of it that is just like bearing it. That's a part of the process. And then as we sit a little longer, after a while, it changes, and we shift our relationship to uncomfort. It's still uncomfortable, but we tolerate it. So it goes from like hating it to bearing it to tolerating it, right? And then we continue to sit. We don't yet care for it, but we don't hate it either. Then we finally come to a place, hopefully, where we care for the pain, for the discomfort. We care for it with attention and mindfulness. Not getting lost in the story about what it means about us or our practice or what kind of yogis we are. But simply that pain is arising. And the sincere intention to meet that. A lot of times, in the beginning, I felt like what arises was completely the opposite of what I was shooting for. I'm trying to feel love and I feel hate. I'm trying to feel compassion, I feel apathy. And then there would be on top of that, there would be a judgment. I hate this practice. It's never going to work. This teacher sucks. I would literally be hating the teacher. Sending them arrows of hate. It's the same way with the practice itself. It's so easy to create suffering about a practice that is trying to alleviate suffering. I mean, we constantly strive for this perfection, and the harder we try, the further we get away from it. The mechanism in itself is perfect. It leads us from ignorance to wisdom, continually bringing us back to the only moment freedom can exist. This practice is to be here with what is, to love what is, even. We see that the quality of our presence begins to change. If we take awareness as our refuge, our capacity to pay attention and respond with kindness, we see the effect. And sometimes when I get really scared, I'm like, wow, remember. You know, remember Mara, remember the conditioned mind that the Buddha was up against with the arrows and the flowers and all of these different temptations. Fear always arises when we're close to the truth. So I try to not leave any voice unloved, even the voice that's saying, get out of this room right now. You know, just shift, you'll be more comfortable. Just take a walk, man. Love yourself. You know, all the compassionate temptations. There's a freedom available to us. Every moment is literally pregnant with liberation. But it's connected to accepting things just as they are. It's like, wow, I worked on the conditions for so long. What does it mean to accept things just as they are? What is this freedom that I am dying to taste? Standing in the middle of an ocean, holding the cup up, trying to catch the rain, you know? So we don't want to create a bunch of suffering around it. Or as Noah put it once, at ease about my unease. You know, you want to be at ease about your unease, right? Because we're not saying just, you know, that it's not going to arise. But we don't have to create the judgment and the suffering on top of it. You know, I say it a lot, but we don't want to turn it into another arena for self-judgment. Practice. Any part of the practice. Any part of our lives. We've done that enough. If we could hate ourselves into being better people, we would be all enlightened. You know? My family itself would be bodhisattvas, far as the eye could see. It's just the strategy doesn't work. Now we've hell of tried it. I am telling you. Sometimes I have this image. It's so, feels so funny to even share, but I feel pretty safe. So it's like Shakyamuni Buddha outside of my house with a bullhorn, just screaming. All right, Ferrara, come out with your heart open. I do. I experience it like that. You know, when I walk out of the house in the morning, sometimes I expect to see a crew of Shakyamunis with bullhorns. It's like, yeah, that's right. We knew you were in there. All right, let's again stop reading the menu and eat the food. So get into the most spiritual position you can. I mean, really, really, no. You want to be as comfortable as possible. I don't, you know, doesn't matter at all. I want you to be comfortable because we want to create a feeling of ease already. Not of stiffness, not of hardness, but of ease. I can hear one of my friends, he always tells me when he hangs up the phone, he's like, be easy. So just be easy. See if you could even find a place in you that has like a half a smile in there, you know? Just the luxury of being able to sit like this and share like this. It's a beautiful, beautiful luxury. And whatever's in your heart, allow yourself to feel it. Whatever's there, just check in with that part, that heart chamber in the center of the chest, some people in the belly. And some people even put their hand up to their chest or belly to see what it's like in that part of their experience. Helps them get in touch with it. Just reflect for a moment on how much you've been through. The difficulties, the suffering, and anything that's been hard. And just let that flow right through the natural caring of the heart. We all carry a tremendous amount of pain. Practice I'd like to try tonight is, it's kind of a Tung Lin practice where we breathe in the pain and breathe out care for the suffering, for the pain. And we have it flow right through our hearts, and you see what happens when we care about it. It helps us meet our difficulties. Instead of closing off to them, we open to them. And whatever arises in the session, it doesn't matter what it is. It's numbness or frustration, anger, sadness. Then we care about that. We just don't want to put conditions on our care. We don't want to live in those kind of prisons. I know a lot of us have put armor around our hearts to protect us. It may have really served us. But right now we're in this room together and it's safe to feel. So breathing right into the heart center, I'll offer up some phrases to you. You can repeat them to yourself, or if they don't resonate, you find your own. You know, trust yourself. You're the expert on you. You're allowing yourself to feel your own sacred measure of pain. May I meet my pain and the pain of the world with compassion. And then taking a breath, breathing in the pain, and breathing out care towards it. May I meet my pain and the pain of the world with compassion. May I learn to deeply care for the difficulties, my own and for all beings that share this condition with me. May I learn to deeply care for the difficulties, my own and for all the beings that share this condition with me. Breathing in the pain, breathing out care toward it. I care about the suffering. May you be free. I care about the suffering. May you be free. Caring about whatever arises with the great heart of compassion. Fear, pain, numbness, confusion. It's all welcome. Nothing left uncared for. Give yourself permission. You can't do this wrong. Just meeting yourself wherever you're at and extending care. There's no feeling you can't offer it to. I care and then be with that. I care about that too. Sometimes I read something to kind of soften my heart if I can't feel it. So I offer a poem. We pray for the children who sneak popsicles before supper, who erase holes in math workbooks, who can never find their shoes. We pray for those who stare at photographers from behind barbed wire, who can't bound down the street in a new pair of sneakers, who never counted potatoes, who are born in places where we wouldn't be caught dead, who never go to the circus, who live in an X-rated world. We pray for children who bring us sticky kisses and fistfuls of dandelions, who hug us in a hurry and forget their lunch money. And we pray for those who never got dessert, who have no safe blanket to drag behind them, who watch their parents watch them die, who can't find any bread to steal, who don't have any rooms to clean up, whose pictures aren't on anybody's dresser, whose monsters are real. We pray for children who spend all their allowance before Tuesday, who throw tantrums in the grocery store and pick at their food, who like ghost stories, who shove dirty clothes under the bed, who never rinse out the tub, who gets visits from the tooth fairy, who don't like to be kissed in front of the carpool, who squirm in church and scream in the phone, whose tears we sometimes laugh at, and whose smiles can make us cry. And we pray for those whose nightmares come in the daytime, who will eat anything. Who have never seen a dentist, who aren't spoiled by anybody. Who go to bed hungry and cry themselves to sleep. Who live and move but have no being. We pray for children who want to be carried and for those who must, who we never give up on. And for those who don't get a second chance. For those we smother. And for those who will grab the hand of anybody kind enough to offer it. Breathing in the pain. Breathing out care toward it. May I meet my pain and the pain of the world with compassion. May I learn to deeply care for the difficulties, my own, and for all beings that share this condition with me. I care about the suffering. May you be free. May I meet my pain and the pain of the world with compassion. May I learn to deeply care for the difficulties, my own, and for all beings that share this condition with me. Care about the suffering. Caring about whatever is arising in this very moment. really deep. Maybe you expected something else to happen, but I just want you to bring a mood of gentleness to this session. We just have to meet ourselves right where we are. That's all we can do. Trusting these things have a timing of their own. We just get to show up and care for whatever's present.